Welcome to Creative Warriors, a community of purpose-driven entrepreneurs, creative thinkers in business doing what we are meant to do. I'm your host, Jeffrey Shaw. Hey, Warriors, I am very excited to have Brian Wetton with us today. Do you ever suffer from making decisions, especially the big ones? Wish you could be more confident in the decisions you do make? Or regret not making a big decision because fear held you back? You're in for a real treat, and so am I, because today, I'm not only introducing you to someone who will teach you to make better decisions, I'm also introducing you to one of the most influential coaches that I've ever worked with. Welcome, Brian.
I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. So let me tell you all a little bit about Brian Wetton. By the age of 30, Brian had earned a Berkeley PhD in computer science, raised $20 million for two Silicon Valley startups, became an internationally known academic and speaker, been part of a $400 million IPO, repeatedly made and lost millions, and burned out twice. After an emotional crisis, he left his career for 6 years of full-time personal growth work, including an MA in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. Now, this is not on Brian's bio, but I will tell you, Brian is one smart guy. Today, Brian serves as an executive coach, leadership consultant, and keynote speaker. He is also the author of a newly released book, Yes, Yes, Hell No, The Little Book for Making Big Decisions. He helps leaders turn soft skills into hard results and supports them in developing companies that both make money and make a difference. He is considered one of the foremost experts in the field of conscious business and authentic leadership. That said, what really excites Brian is his family. He lives in LA with his wife, Nicole, where they spend much of their time wondering how their two daughters can be so cute. And I know that to be true because I follow Brian on Facebook. So, Brian, before you share your amazing insights with us, we want to know a little bit more about you personally. In much of the book, you share many stories about your wife, Nicole, and your beautiful daughters. I'm sure there are many, but what is one big life lesson you've learned from your daughters?
Oh, my goodness. Joy would be one of the biggest ones. Our daughters are these infinite wells of joy. And I keep getting into all my overstress and pushies, and I got to get more done and serve more people and do bigger stuff. And I remember Annabelle in particular, when she was about 10 months old, would literally lose muscle control because she was laughing so hard. She'd like thrash around in these joy seizures on the ground. And so they keep reminding me to laugh and to lighten up.
That's fantastic. So what's the best piece of advice you ever received, a meaningful quote, or a favorite book you would offer to us to inspire us, and why?
Well, I think the defining quote of my life is from Teilhard de Chardin, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And it's a simple distinction. Are we human beings, or are we spiritual beings? And that's the defining quote of my life. I believe, and my deepest experiences reinforce this, that who we really are at our core is infinite love, infinite goodness, something better than we can imagine. And yes, we're having a human experience, and the point of life is to wake up and remember who we really are.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. I've heard the quote, but you put it in great context. All right, so I want to talk about this amazing book, Yes, Yes, Hell No. And the title, Yes, Yes, Hell No, comes from what you refer to as the three voices. So tell us about the three voices.
Well, I would love to. And before I do this, I want to give you a shout out, because this book might not exist without you. So Jeff, for those of you listening, Jeff is both a dear friend and colleague and past client, and it was his prodding and kicking and pushing and inviting a couple years ago that, Brian, you really should write that as a book around that concept. Yeah, Jeff recognized the value of this concept clearly enough that it's now in book form. So thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, well, thank you. And as you said, it's because what you speak about in these three voices has tremendous value. So tell us all about them.
Okay. So the three voices, the first is the voice of spirit or intuition. The second voice is the voice of reason, the rational mind. And then the third voice is the voice of fear, which lives in our body.
Can you break down, and I know it's, you know, it involves the whole book, but can you break down, like, what do each of the voices represent, and how do we listen into it?
Yeah. So it's really important to be able to pull them apart. This is the core premise of the book, is that a lot of the problems in life show up because we don't recognize which voice is which and what's speaking and how to interpret them. So the voice of intuition is not a logical or verbal voice usually. The most common way it shows up for most people is as a resonance. So for myself, it's literally a feeling of light. It's a feeling of inspiration, of joy. I feel it's very hard to describe or put words on still, but most people have reference points for it, and they can go, oh yeah, I have a reference point for that. Like when I'm in session with a client, I'll be listening for the energy of their words, for what really resonates, what's on course, what lights them up, what's truth for them. And some things they'll say will literally light me up. My awareness gets pulled up to my head. I feel my chest opening. I'm more expansive. Some other things feel like a thud. It's just like this disconnect. Okay? So one of the biggest things is that people often think that intuition is like a burning bush, or I need to have my purpose told to me by some being in the sky to go do this one special thing. As opposed to, it's really a hot and cold indicator. Okay, the voice of reason is the one that we're usually the most familiar with, though it can also be tricky because a lot of times the voice of fear will masquerade as reason. It'll come up with all these stories that are really fear speaking, pretending to be truth. Right? The voice of reason does not have emotion. It's like Spock. It's just clean.
Yeah.
Right? And then the voice of fear is shows up as a whole range of negative emotions. It can also show up as upset, that fight or flight response, as anger, as judgment, as hatred, as shame, as guilt. Any negative emotion is sourced out of the voice of fear ultimately.
It's interesting. Having heard, you know, having learned this lesson from you before, I think I've always felt that the voice of fear was the loudest. The fact of the matter is, it may not be the loudest. It may just be the one that we're most attuned to listening to, where the voice of intuition can be subtle until you're trained to listen to it. And then, as you were saying, the voice of intuition can actually be very loud.
Exactly. I find that the voice of intuition in my life is the dominant thing I listen for these days. But it took a lot of training to get to the point, and it took a lot of making friends with my fears, which I think we're going to talk about later.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So thank you for breaking down the voices. There's so much to talk about, but that we'll circle around it. But one of the standout moments, although there were many, but one of the standout moments in the book for me was when you said that that the courage to conquer requires determination. The courage to change requires acceptance. And that creating an extraordinary life requires developing both determination and acceptance. And I love the duality of that. So can you explain to us how that is so, to balance the determination and acceptance?
Yeah, and these are really the two sides of mature love. They're the two strengths of heart, let's call it. Two heart strengths that we all have. And usually one is stronger than the other for most people. And we often just misunderstand them as well. We don't necessarily recognize them for what they are. So when we're dealing with external physical dangers, the more masculine form of courage, which tends to be celebrated more in our culture, is the courage to conquer. This is the archetype of the hero going out and slaying dragons. Okay, in the book, I talk about my cousin who's a Green Beret on his third tour of duty in Afghanistan. And he's serving the country, our country. He is this warrior. He's this hero that goes out and conquers enemies. Okay, but inward change, you cannot conquer your fears. Okay, really hear that. You cannot conquer your fears. You cannot conquer your self-judgments. You cannot conquer your insecurities or your unworthiness. Okay? One of the most foundational rules of psychology, I'd almost call it a law, is that what you resist persists. The more you try to fight one of your inner voices, such as the voice of fear, the louder it becomes. Now, it can go underground for a while. It can wiggle and twist, but it doesn't go away. So inner change always starts with acceptance. One of my spiritual teachers says that acceptance is the first law of spirit. Okay?
Love that.
So inner change starts with the courage to accept, the courage to change. Outer change starts with the courage to conquer.
Excellent. So let's do talk about the voice of fear then. With that information, tell us then about accepting. So it sounds like we have to listen to the voice of fear and accept the voice of fear.
Exactly. That the dominant thing that we do in almost all cases as human beings, like 99% of the time, even coaches and therapists that have been in the field for 10, 20 years, regularly come to my seminars and have these huge aha moments around the tools we teach around this. Because this is such a dominant pattern, we don't even usually notice that it's there. But almost universally, we have three responses to fear. The first is try to fight or conquer it. I'm going to push through it. I'm going to be super strong. I'm going to conquer those fears. And that goes for self-judgments as well. I'm going to push through my insecurities. The second approach is to flee from it, to deny it in some way. We distract ourselves. We pretend it's not there. We put on a happy face, just practice positive thinking, but in a bypass kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
We avoid it, right? And then the third choice is to feed it, which shows up most commonly with victim consciousness. We wallow in our negativity, in how miserable we are, how miserable our lives are. We're the victim of this and this and that. Well, there's lots of other ways we do it, but it's either fight, flee, or feed. But those are all really just different voices of fear. They're a fear response, fight or flight or feed. It's meeting fear with fear, and it just makes it worse. So the core choice point is to learn how to listen to and then embrace our fears.
Beautiful.
And that changes everything.
Yeah, I can see that it would. It was definitely, there was a pivotal understanding in the book. Now, and as you say, most of us make decisions by weighing pros and cons, you know, maybe listening to our gut, asking a friend, or, you know, God forbid, flip a coin. So if most of us make our decisions that way, what's different about your approach?
So the most important thing is that it honors each of the three voices for their role that they have to play. So what I'm teaching is a way of making decisions in life, finding your purpose, living your calling, creating more success, everything you want in life, by understanding and honoring the correct and proper role of each of the three voices. Okay? And the most important of those three to understand, because it's the most counterintuitive, is the voice of fear. And this is that aha that in the absence of a real and present danger, the voice of fear is an almost perfect indicator of which way to go, as long as you go the opposite way.
Fantastic.
Right?
Yep.
If you're facing what I call a tiger, which is a real and present danger, somebody coming at you with a knife in a dark and crowded alley, run. Right? That's a no, no, hell no. Right, everybody agrees. Get out of here. Okay, but what fear usually signifies in our culture, because there just aren't that many more real live tigers anymore, is an opportunity for deep change.
So when at a point of making a decision, and again, go right back to the title of the book, yes, yes, hell no, represents the three voices, the voice of intuition, the voice of reason, and it's the voice of fear that is saying hell no, and serving the purpose to, you know, it's a little bit of a reality check, but pointing you likely to be in the direction you should go, which, as you said, is in the opposite direction of what the fear is guiding you towards.
Exactly. So the best possible way to make an on-course, terrific, great, life-changing decision, big or small, is just the compass heading, the truest pointer to true north, is when the voice of intuition lights up. And there's a resonance. There's a sense that it's on path for you. The voice of reason checks out the decision and grounds it. Oftentimes, a yes, yes, hell no feels like a leap of faith. It feels dangerous. It feels scary. But the voice of reason grounds it and says, okay, this is rational. It's sane. It's not an actual real and present danger. It's not an actual cliff. Okay? And then the voice of fear says, hell no, run away. Okay? When you get those three together, that is the surest possible way of knowing that you're on course.
Terrific. Now, I love the fact you just used the phrase leap of faith, because over the years that I've known you, you have the best definition of faith I've ever heard. So for the benefit of all us warriors, share with us how you define faith.
And it's in chapter 12 of the book that mature faith is the practice of leaping and being caught. It's the practice. It's not a concept. It's not a belief. It's a habit. It's a practice of leaping and being caught. Now, you have to actually take a leap of faith as opposed to a leap of stupidity if you're going to get caught. And the leap of faith is the yes, yes, hell, no. That's what indicates a leap of faith, that your spirit lights up and says it's on course. Your reason checks it out, makes sure it's sane. It's often scary and safe. And then the voice of fear says, hell no. And what I find is that every time we take a leap of faith, we get caught. And the book actually walks through 10 different ways we get caught, 10 gifts of this process of finding and taking our yes, yes, hell no's.
You offer a really good, almost logical explanation tied in with this process of taking a leap of faith. You offer an almost logical explanation of what it means to hit a wall, which is such a common phrase, but I've never heard anyone explain why we hit a wall or how it happens. So if you would, explain to us how we come to hit a wall.
Well, first off, I have to say, this is the one that took me the longest time probably to figure out, because I spent most of my 20s just plowing through walls. I joke that if there was a cartoon made of my 20s, me as my crazy overachiever self, it would be a picture of a bunch of brick walls, like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon or Roadrunner cartoon, with one Brian-shaped imprint after another through the walls.
I know what you mean.
So after enough of these walls and two burnouts, because one wasn't enough, I started paying attention, like, maybe there's another option here. And what I recognize is that a wall shows up when your intuition doesn't light up, but your voice of reason is pushing you forward. And often the voice of fear is there as well. So it's scary. You're being courageous. It's that courage to conquer. It's that force of will. I'm pushing forward. I'm going to do this one way or another. But intuition is not lighting up. Okay? Oftentimes there's a determination. There's a should behind it. Okay. One of the clearest walls of my life was when I finished my career in Silicon Valley. And after my second burnout was really one of the biggest walls I've ever hit in my life, where I went from having all this fire and inspiration and purpose and calling. I mean, my 8 years in Silicon Valley were an extraordinary gift to me. And they were so on purpose. And then all of a sudden, one day, after our company's gone public, I've made all this money, I've achieved all these things, I'm actually feeling really bad because I've run up so far up the ladder of achievement, it's not getting me what I really wanted in life, which was love and happiness. But my intuition stopped. My inspiration, my passion, my purpose, that was just gone. And I'm like, my voice of reason and my voice of fear together actually are saying, you got to get a bigger job. You got to get more money. You got to keep going. This is like the golden lottery ticket you've won. And my intuition said, no, it was just this thud. There was no flow anymore. There was no inspiration. And so I say that a wall is often paired with a leap of faith. It's an indicator that it's time to change course. For me, my change of course was almost insane in nature. I walked away from one of the most lucrative careers I could imagine. I was interviewing for executive roles at public technology companies. And I just found out that one of my friends and colleagues from that time, one of my peers from Berkeley, is now one of the top five executives at Apple. And I was on a very fast track, but it was done. Right, and no matter how hard I pushed it, it was just this thud, thud, ow, ow. And so I looked around and I found this other leap of faith, which was my true yes, yes, hell no, where my intuition did light up and my fear said, hell no, we can't walk away from this career. But it was exactly what I needed to do in order to create the family and the love of the life, the love of my life, which is what I most wanted.
Right. I think one of the, as you said, by breaking apart the three voices, one of the many advantages is to actually understand that concept of the wall. I had never understood that. Even in all the years of working with you, I never understood it as well as it came across in the book, that it was actually, you know, it was the mixture. It was the matching of the three voices. All three of them weren't there. And the mixture that the pattern that the match that existed, lacked the intuition. And knowing that, it's like, of course we're going to hit a wall then. It was, like I said, truly the best explanation I've ever heard of what it means to hit a wall, which is something, like I said, it's such a common phrase and we all know it. So then explain to us let's make this a little more positive. Tell us about the big win and how that plays into making decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is a very optimistic book, and definitely we start talking about fear and walls and challenges, and I have a tendency myself to go into paying attention to all of the fears, and it's another way of feeding those fears. So what the book is really about is finding big wins and making big decisions. So a big decision is a yes, yes, I'll know. It's a choice that the intuition lights up, reason grounds, and fear says hell no. A big win is very similar. It's a goal or an intention that lights you up. It's heartfelt. It's specific. So reason makes it specific enough that you can really tell, okay, can I accomplish that or not? It's not just this vague, I'm going to serve the planet. It's, you know, I'm going to go serve 10 more people this year and make an extra $100,000 doing it in ways that provide exceptional value. That's a heartfelt, specific goal. And then it's also scary, right? So, for example, one of my New Year's intentions, not New Year's resolution, but a New Year intention for me, a big win for this year, is to lose 10 pounds and to get my health up to the point where I qualify for the highest tier of life insurance. When I applied for life insurance a year ago, they dinged me because my blood pressure and cholesterol levels were too high and my weight was too high. I was like, I was an athlete. I'm in great shape. What's wrong with you? Like, it set off this whole thing in me. I'm like, are you, you know? But it was a wake-up call. Like, okay, I've got two young kids. I haven't been taking such good care of myself. So that's a very heartfelt and specific goal for me. Okay? And it's also scary. And that, okay, for me to lose 10 pounds and really look at my health and to look at the places where I'm not taking care of myself and the risks of that, that's scary. Right? So it's a big win for me. For me to really go after that, to find that yes, yes, hell no, that heartfelt, specific, scary goal, that would be a life changer for me. So this is one of the biggest things I do with my coaching clients, and that we do as part of our seminars as well, is train people how to find their heartfelt, specific, scary goals, which is a yes, yes, hell no. And those are the things that if you find just one or two of those a year even, and really go after those and get support in going after them, that will change your life in ways beyond measure.
Fantastic. Now, as I was reading Yes, Yes, Hell No, I was thinking that making decisions is sort of like a muscle, and you don't so much say this in the book, it was just sort of my own, what I extrapolated from the book, was that it's sort of like making like a muscle, and that to create balance, you know, and I'm thinking in terms of yoga, that often we look to strengthen the weaker side or the weaker muscle. So is it important then to be aware of whether we in our own lives want to strengthen our ability to make better decisions, or whether we want to learn to make decisions easier?
That's a great question. I think it's probably the first, that the real muscle we're building is the ability to make better decisions, recognizing that they're not necessarily going to get, they do get easier over time because it just becomes this trust of, oh, I'm going to take a leap of faith, I'm going to get caught. Okay, I'm at a place now in my work, in particular, my coaching work and facilitation work, where I have such 1,000% confidence that if a client relationship and their goals that they put at stake are on course, if it's a yes, yes, hell no for them and it's a clean fit, that I will show up and miracles will happen. I mean, it's just one yes, yes, hell no, leap of faith, get caught, leap of faith, get caught, over and over again. And the consistency of miracles that are showing up in my life and the lives of my clients astound me, not just because of how big they are, but the consistency. It's this rock-solid trust I have, looking back on my own life and the lives of my clients, of how unbelievably accurate this leap of faith thing is, how trustworthy it is. Okay? But it's still not necessarily easy because the voice of fear is there. It's just over and over again. For me, a lot of my biggest yes, yes, hell no's, my most consistent ones show up in my relationship with my wife and my daughters, where there's so much love in my life that it scares me. It terrifies me at times. And so I often get defensive or grumpy or stressed or lash out or withdraw because I've gotten triggered on something in relationship with my wife. And there's this voice inside saying, oh my goodness, she doesn't really love you. If she really loved you, she wouldn't do that. And I've got to try to pull away and protect myself. Well, it's not easy, but it's the greatest decision I could make is to come back to, no, my wife loves me and I love her. And what do I need to do right now to open my heart and to be in relationship with her?
Yeah. You do a great job in the book of using your relationship with Nicole to exemplify all sorts of life lessons and knowing Nicole. I mean, she just seems like such a solid core. You're a lucky man. She lets you dance around her quite a bit.
I'm clear that she is the sun that the rest of the planets in our family revolve around. She's the supernova. I'm the dim light just trying to keep up with her and my two little girls. So.
Yeah. Every time in the book, and any reader will see this, you recite her words often that she says, "What's wrong with you?" And every time I read it, I chuckled because I could actually physically see her saying the word. I absolutely love that. So the crux of the book is you offer a 10-step process to make decisions. Now, we can't possibly cover all 10, and for that reason, you need to read the book. But two of the earlier steps that really stood out to me and I think are often overlooked is what I'd like to pick your brain about a little bit. And the first was, I love this one. This was a real big takeaway for me, was to pick your paradigm. So explain to us what pick your paradigm means.
Great question. This is a fairly profound topic. So let me see if I can do it justice in a soundbite. The dominant thing that determines our world is not even our character, our genetics, our personality, whether we're a nice person or not, whether we're good looking. The dominant thing that determines the nature and experience and quality of your life over time is your consciousness. It's where you're looking at the world from, whether you're looking from a place of abundance and joy and love. And I talk about this in detail in the book. So if this doesn't make total sense right now, please read the book. It'll make a lot more sense there. So, but it's literally, there's two different worlds inside of each person. It goes back to those three voices, right? To the voice of fear, we live in a kill or be killed world where everything dies. To the voice of my heart and my soul and my spirit, there is no suffering. There is no death. There is only love. We live in a world of infinite abundance where everything is conspiring to support us in every way at every moment. Okay? So this root question is, which of those places are you going to live from? Okay? Are you going to, on a daily basis, feed the voice of fear and choose to live from a world of stress and scarcity? Or are you going to seek to upgrade your paradigm and take these leaps of faith and practice asking the question, how is it true right now that my universe is supporting me?
Yeah, I think one of the examples of choosing your paradigm that you offer in the book was, do you believe the universe is conspiring against you or for you? And I tell you, I would challenge every warrior out there to really think about that, because I had to say my own answer was a bit of a surprise, because I consider myself to be the eternal optimist. But when I really deeply asked myself that question, I had to say, almost embarrassingly say, I don't know that I live in the paradigm that the universe conspires for me, which is why I work so hard. I work so hard because I haven't learned to trust or to lean into the paradigm that, hey, it'll all be okay. The universe is conspiring for me. Really, I mean, that shift alone in this book is just a life-changing moment.
I agree 100%. And it's not that the experience of every moment is going to feel abundant. That's one of the big mistakes here. A lot of times we're focused on the feeling first. The feeling and the experience of the consciousness shows up as you commit to which path you're going to walk, which paradigm you're going to choose, and you take those leaps of faith over and over again, and then you start to notice, oh yeah, I'm working too hard again. You and I share that pattern. Let me slow down and pay attention to what is the voice of fear really saying here? What's the yes, yes, hell, no I'm overlooking? Where am I buying into the belief that I'm living in an unsafe universe?
Perfect. And one of the other steps you offer is to upgrade your fuel source. So, and I know this is another really big topic, but if you could possibly summarize the difference between a negative and a positive fuel source and give us a little context to that, that would be great.
Sure. And we're not going to be able to teach you how to upgrade your fuel source. That's a huge topic I spend months and sometimes years with clients on and students. But just to start with the distinction, because it is a huge aha for people, is the dominant fuel source, the fuel people put in their fuel tank to get their car driving around town, is stress. Okay, it's the primary fuel that most people most of the time use in our culture. The thing is, stress is a socially acceptable word for pain, fear, and self-judgment. I call the three poisons in another context. Stress is a socially acceptable word, socially acceptable name for pain, fear, and self-judgment. Okay, it's negativity that we use to create a panic, a fight or flight response. We actually try to harness the voice of fear and use it to create positive results. Okay, another way of saying this, stress is us trying to use negative fuel to create a positive result. The problem is, every time we draw on negative fuel, it reinforces a negative paradigm. It creates lower consciousness. It creates a cascade of chronic illnesses through the body. It creates procrastination. If anyone listening has issues with procrastination, one of the little things in the book is the true reason why we procrastinate and how to change that. Okay. So all of these things come as automatic consequences of trying to use stress as our primary fuel source. Okay, and another consequence is stress makes us stupid. There's studies showing that stress-based scarcity thinking drains 12 to 13 IQ points from people. Okay, it destroys creativity. If you have creative warriors, creativity is the antithesis of stress. It's the exact polar opposite in consciousness. Okay, so you can't stress your way to creativity. It just doesn't work. So instead, there's this whole paradigm-changing movement and practice, not as a concept, but as a set of habits you build, of learning how to use your agreements, being impeccable with your word, becoming a master of setting and keeping agreements, and a master of finding your purpose, which is what the Yes, Yes, Hell, No is about. Yes, Yes, Hell, No's are the surest guidance of finding your purpose that I know of. So pulling those two together, as well as a few other key steps, to upgrade your fuel source so that you're loving your work, you're loving your life, you're loving each thing you do each day, and that transforms everything.
Couldn't agree with you more. As you know, it's the basis of my coaching work. I mean, I want to get creative entrepreneurs out of just getting by, because it's when they get out of getting by that the true creativity and how they can benefit the world. And, I like to say that I want to improve the world one entrepreneur at a time, because each entrepreneur that's unleashed from the burden, is free to serve the world in a better way, in a bigger way as well. So perfectly said. Thank you for explaining to us about the fuel source. Now, I have to say, while the intention of the book may be, or as the title says, about making decisions, it's actually a small life manual. Is the book so full and so chock full of life lessons because you have so much to share? Or is it because that making decisions is such a part of our life that it anchors all the other life lessons?
I'm not sure if it's an either or. I'm not sure about that. There is something brilliant in there, which is One of the core themes I have in the book and for my life, I'm in tremendous gratitude for my life. I live an absolutely extraordinary life. I am blessed beyond words. It makes me cry thinking of it. And it's not because I'm the smartest person, the most brilliant, this, that. It's the core gift of my life looking back. The one thing I am grateful above, probably all others, though that's a hard thing to say because there's quite a few things I'm grateful for. But one of the greatest gifts of my life is that I stumbled on this tool for how to make decisions early on. I didn't recognize it consciously. For most of my life, it was an unconscious competence. But it was my connection to these three voices. I have a big fat brain. Yes, I am very intelligent at a rational level. I can just own that. It comes with tremendous painful problems as well. So it's not just a gift. I also have a really strong connection to my voice, the voice of intuition. It took me a long time to recognize that and learn how to really work with it. And then somewhere along the line, I really got this hell no thing, and I developed the practice of moving into my fears rather than away from them. And I stumbled onto this tool, and I used it over and over and over again to make all of the biggest, most important decisions in my life. And as a result, I've lived an extraordinarily on-purpose life, even though it's been completely counterintuitive at times.
That's wonderful. Actually, I'm going to summarize before we move into a little break and then a discovery round questions. I'm actually going to summarize the book, something you say so beautifully in the book, I think summarizes what you just said perfectly. And it is in the book when you say that you've learned to trust your spirit is much better at this game of decision making than your mind is, and that both are much wiser than your fears.
Spot on.
Perfectly said. It was just a great way to round out the essence of this book. So Brian, in a moment, I'm going to ask you our discovery round questions. So while you're preparing yourself for these thought provoking questions, I hear that all the time. Everybody says it sounds like a game show, but we're going to hear a brief message and then we'll be right back. If you're in business doing something you're truly passionate about, my new training and coaching program, The Creative Warrior Unleashed, will rock your world. The Creative Warrior Unleashed is a 7-week program where you overcome the 7 core conflicts that stop creative entrepreneurs in their tracks. I know this journey. I've lived it myself. These are the 7 conflicts that are common amongst creative thinkers and must be overcome to achieve your highest level of success. You'll learn why your so-called lack of focus is your greatest asset. How to create more flow in your business so that being in business is easier than you ever imagined. How to create a clear brand identity so that you are easily found by your perfect clients. And create a diversified business that excites you and rewards you with multiple streams of income. In just 7 weeks, you can gain the clarity that you need for your business success. Simply go to creativewarriorunleashed.com to find out when the next 7-week program begins. The Creative Warrior Unleashed, the path to success for the creative warrior. Check it out, creativewarriorunleashed.com. All right, Brian, it's time for our discovery round questions. Question number 1, what drives you crazy?
My email inbox drives me absolutely nuts.
I can certainly understand why. Number 2, looking back, what's something that you can't believe you did for your career?
I mean, the biggest one would probably be leaving Silicon Valley to step into the complete unknown, ended up doing a completely different career than I ever would have imagined possible. I'm doing the last thing on earth I ever imagined doing growing up as a nerd in the cornfields of Illinois.
And third question, and I know this is going to come easy for you because you're so on purpose. Is there something in common in everything that inspires you and the paths that you've chosen to take?
Well, I say that the meaning of life is 4 things: growth, contribution, connection, and creativity. And those are the 4 forms of purpose energy I pay most attention to. And those show up just over and over and over and over again in everything I do.
Beautiful. Last question is, imagine you are sitting around a campfire and out of the darkness appears your greatest enemy, which does not have to be a person. What inner warrior inside yourself do you call upon and why?
I'm trying to think of who my greatest enemy would be. Whatever it is, it's going to be faith. It's my trust that my universe is supporting me. My trust that I live in a positive universe. My trust that whatever I need to handle this enemy is already inside of me or available to me.
Mm, perfect. Beautifully said. So tell us a little bit about your offer. You've made a very generous offer to our community of warriors, which we're going to put on creative-warriors.com. So tell us a little bit about what you're offering our community.
Beautiful. And there's actually two things. The first is two downloads. You can download the first five chapters of Yes, Yes, Hell, No, along with the complimentary full workbook. It's a full companion guide to the book. You can download both of those as a gift to you. And then for the first 50 people, not just from this podcast, but it's an offer that we've got going right now for the month of January, we're offering a $400 training to learn how to take these tools that you've been hearing about and use them to make 2015 your best year ever. So we're going to do a 30-day transformational teletraining starting January 26th. We're offering that free to the first 50 people that qualify by buying three copies of the book on Amazon and writing a review. So you can have one copy for you and two for your friends. It's an extraordinary gift to the people in your lives. So it's a life-changing 30-day seminar where you're going to learn how to make friends with your fears. You're going to find the big wins that matter most to you. You're going to set the blueprint, the plan for 2015, not as a set of resolutions that you're going to make and fail, but we're actually going to set you up for success in one of the most powerful processes I've ever seen, completely free if you buy three copies and follow the instructions on that free offer.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. I mean, the value of that is tremendous, and I know anytime working with you is life-changing, as it always has been for me. So again, everyone, just go to creative-warriors.com, where you can not only get Brian's generous offer, but the offers from all previous guests as well. So, Brian, thank you for taking the time, suffering through a cold, and standing by your commitment to be here today. So thank you.
My pleasure. I so appreciate having you in my life, and thank you for helping birth this book and for helping be the first official interview of the book. This is breaking news from Jeffrey Shaw.
Well, it's really an honor for me as well. So thank you for that, Brian. So that's it for now, warriors. Let's go out, create, serve, and be prosperous.